searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
I think our nation was turned on its head for 3 years based on a completely bogus narrative that was largely hyped by an irresponsible press.
Hello and welcome into this Friday edition of The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. I'm your occasionally humble host. For this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity, hoping you're having a fantastic day. It's been a great week. Hasn't it been a great week? I mean, there was a lot of tension. There was a lot of nervousness at the beginning of the week. A bit of anxiety. But then there was this vote. There was a State of the Union address. Probably the best in recent memory, at least. And then a vote of acquittal. Proving that everything that's been going on has been a farce. And it's now all out in the open. And what a fantastic... Did you see Trump's speech yesterday? He actually walked into the room in front of all those people, had a prepared speech that he had he and his writers had crafted, and he set it aside, and he said, I'm not going to do a speech today. And he pulled out a list of all of the people he wanted to thank. And he recognized each one of them by name. He told heartfelt little personal stories about each one of them. The one about Jim Jordan was hilarious. Very, very funny moment. And from that point forward, it was just a love fest. And at the end, a senator whose name escapes me now, somebody from Congress stood up and said, hey, we're a microcosm of the United States of America. We represent what they really feel. We've all got your back. And that was a tremendous moment and a tremendous day for President Trump. He was honest. He was sincere. He joked around with his people, and you could tell this is a man who has decades of experience of dealing with employees and businesses, that he is a man who knows how to work with people and how to motivate people to get jobs done. And we watched the man deliver yesterday, if you got a chance to see it. If you didn't get a chance to see it, I encourage you, dig it up on YouTube. It's on YouTube. Just look for his speech from yesterday on the on the 6th of February, and you will find the video there. It's less than an hour long. Trust me, it's worth your time just to watch, to see how he handles everything, the stories he tells about the various people, everything that he has to say, his attitude. It's all very telling, and it was good. I think you'd appreciate it if you didn't get to see it. If you have only seen the snippets and heard the news commentary, you seriously really need to set aside the time, even if it's at lunch today and you watch it on YouTube on your phone. Plug in your ear pods, your earpieces, and just listen and watch and see what it was like yesterday. If you didn't get a chance to see it, you really should. Have I mentioned that you should watch this speech? Because if I didn't, I need to tell you now, you need to watch this speech. It was really good. Oh, man. Well, happy Friday. I hope you're having a great day. Wherever and whenever you may be listening, if you're on live Facebook Live this morning, welcome to the club. It's good to have you along today. If you are listening via podcast, thank you. Thank you very much for listening via podcast. I really appreciate the fact that you are there each day, that you're part of the family, and I apologize for the frog in my throat. It will not go away. That's the second or third time you've actually heard it. It's been more often for me because I turn the microphone down and back up again and clear my throat in between. And yes, I'm not one of those who just lets things like this happen and then complains about it. I actually take stuff I took something to dry me up a little bit earlier because I was having an issue before I came to the studio. And apparently whatever this is just laughing at the Sudafed. It's just that stuff. Are you kidding? Well, it's a It's a, I'm glad you're there. As I was saying, I'm glad you're there. If you're listening via podcast, thanks for being part of that growing family. And I appreciate you being there every day, checking in and sharing the podcast. I hope you're sharing the podcast, right? You're telling your friends, this is something I listen to every day. I think you might enjoy it. Please do that. And let's get this family even bigger than it is now. It is a Friday edition, February 7th, 2020 of the Daily Perspective podcast. Today, the stack of stories is not as tall as it usually is, and there are various reasons for that. One of them being that there aren't that many stories which aren't focused on the same thing. Different sources all talking about the same things, and we will hit those high spots today. There are oddball stories. Like, I saw a story early this morning posted by, who posted that? I can't remember who stuck it on their Facebook page this morning, but it was a story about I think it was the Chernobyl reactor and how there was some kind of a fungus that had grown in the Chernobyl reactor. And this was an old story. I went and checked the date on it. It was an old story, but it was a story I had not seen. And it turned out that this fungus actually eats radioactive material. And it's the Chernobyl reactor, there is actually a natural byproduct that is consuming the radiation. And I thought to myself, didn't I see this movie? Isn't that going to grow into something monstrous and destroy Russia? I mean, and then march around the world. It'll divide itself into smaller monsters, which will then get bigger and destroy every major city or every place that has a nuclear reactor. It'll go after it. I've seen this movie. I've watched way too much sci-fi. I really have. But it was a weird story. There are other stories, too, about the Harvey Weinstein. I shared this on the Facebook page earlier, that Harvey Weinstein, I think Harvey Weinstein may get off. Maybe a bad choice of words, but I think Harvey Weinstein might actually get away with this because of the way things are going in his trial. And I'm pulling the story up because I don't want to just talk out of the side of my head about this. I want to pull stuff up, but because I'm connected to the internet now and I'm feeding audio and video, everything's going very slowly. Oh, here we go. It's a story on dailywire.com. The title is Five Reasons Harvey Weinstein May Be Found Not Guilty. And I'll pull it up. Okay, I'll pull it up just so I can actually tick off the reasons, but I want you to go read the story. And my summary, basically, that I tacked on top of this story when I linked it is the following. FYI. The case being presented against Weinstein is beginning to look flimsy. Don't be surprised if he wins. In spite of his open secret history of womanizing and the many, 80 to 90, claims of sexual aggressiveness toward young women, the parameters of the court proceedings, the limitations placed upon the prosecution, and the apparently inept prosecution strategy is adding up to a Weinstein victory. No wonder Weinstein has been so cavalier in his attitude toward the trial. Talking during the proceedings, he's actually been called down because the prosecution has been trying to cross-examine someone, and they've had to ask the judge to tell him, would you mind telling him to be quiet? Because he's talking loud enough for everybody in the room to hear during the trial. And he's been called out by the judge as well for constantly texting. He apparently knows the outcome already. He isn't concerned. Could it be that powerful people are pulling strings for Weinstein? Could his contributions to progressive politics be paying off for him now? Things that make you go, Let's look quickly. These are quick points. We've got time to do this, right? Point number one, despite reports of 80 victims, Weinstein faces only two criminal accusers. The media and activist groups cite over 80 women. One report says more than 90 who have been victims of Weinstein. However, when the case opened in Lower Manhattan, the jury was told they are only to decide on his guilt with two accusers. Now, the court has also heard allegations from four other women, but these are just being used to show previous bad acts to bolster the case, and the jury has been told they can't pronounce judgment on the actions alleged by those four women. Number two, every allegation contains serious evidential weaknesses. In some cases, the allegation defies common sense. There are large holes, like these women treating him as a boyfriend, one wanting him to meet her mother. There are lots of things wrong. Number three, the prosecution's relying on a radical new theory to explain why Weinstein's alleged victims maintained sexual, friendly, and business relationships with him after allegedly being attacked. And this is wacko. Dr. Barbara Ziv, professor at Temple University, has a career giving advice at evidence, that is, at rape trials, pushing this new theory that it's normal for women to have relationships with and write lovingly to their attackers, often for years after the initial attack. If you're a woman listening to the sound of my voice right now, you just curled up, your entire body flexed. What? You know that's crazy. That's insane. But that's part of what's going on here. Number four, at times the prosecution appears to be reaching in their attempts to explain why Weinstein's sexual encounters must be rape. You could call this the "is she really going out with him?" theory. The prosecution has argued on a number of occasions that because Harvey Weinstein is and was physically unattractive and the women were beautiful, that this is evidence that the jury should consider in their deliberations. It's number five. The prosecution is urging the jury to believe her truth. The defense is asking them to believe the truth. So what we're seeing happen here is essentially the Me Too movement making the prosecution. The Me Too movement is asking the jury to believe her truth. And the prosecution is asking them to believe the truth. There's truth, and then there's your opinion. If they don't agree, then your opinion is at fault. And the Me Too movement has insisted for all of this time that we ignore all rationality, all reason, all evidence to the contrary, and believe her truth. So watch this case carefully, because I believe it's entirely possible that Weinstein is going to walk away, although he'll walk away with a walker. He's going to walk away from this. He will have suffered in the public eye, in the court of public opinion, but legally, not so much. This is a gigantic disservice, a monumental disservice to the women he's abused. All of these people. But it also is showing what I've said here and what Dave and I had said for many times on the Mark and Mike show, and that is a lot of these women knew exactly what they were getting into, and they knew exactly what they were doing. And may well have done it for a very specific reason, because they knew this guy had the power to make them famous. It's a bizarre, bizarre situation. But watch it closely. Also, as I said already, it's distinctly possible that certain people who owe Harvey Weinstein a lot for their political careers may have been setting things up so that this is the way this trial has gone. That's just theory. It's just, as I said, things that make you go, But it is something to think about. And considering what we have been watching happening in Washington, D.C. since the election of Donald Trump, it's not unreasonable for us to consider that possibly powerful people in high places who have benefited monetarily from contributions by Harvey Weinstein could be pulling strings in the background to make sure he doesn't suffer any more than absolutely necessary. Because this man, as vile as he is responsible for funneling and networking a lot of money to progressive politicians. And he has helped set the stage for progressive thought in America by producing extremely progressive, loony, radical leftist ideas in film. Like I said, one of those things that makes you go,
This portion of the show is being brought to you by The Best Things in Life, which are still free with minimum purchase at participating dealers.
Okay, this whole deja vu thing is really starting to wig me out because this is happening again. The same bumper music. It's like the same bumper music. I'm used to hearing the PSAs go by. If you're on the podcast, you don't hear that part, the breaks. But if you're on Facebook Live, you hear that. And I'm used to hearing that turnover because there's only so many of those things out there in the real world. And you just use them and they roll again and again and again. But the bumper music is not supposed to repeat for 28 days. I mentioned this the other day, and of course I'm busy when I get through here. So it just goes right out of my head and I forget to do anything about it. But anyway, let's see if I can fix that today. I've got to fix that today. I don't want this happening again Monday. So how are you? You okay? Enough about me. Oh, man, what a weird experience I'm having with my technology. And, oh, another technological thing. I think after all of these years of working with tech and being a tech head and, you know, being the guy in the room who can tell you why your mouse is behaving oddly, that kind of thing, I'm having tech come back and bite me. That's one example, right? This software package that I use for coordinating all of the odds and ends around the segments, that it's decided, oh, I'm tired of this. I'm retired. I'm not doing this no more. I'm going to give you the same thing every day. You just live with that. My union rep says I can sit down right here and smoke a cig and you can't do nothing about it, right? So that's kind of how it's going for me. So yesterday, I finished editing down another podcast, the Dawson Now podcast, and the parts have been kind of laying in the editor for a while, and it launches, or I should say the hip thing is drops. It drops next Tuesday. So I finished the edit. I got it all up. I uploaded it to the server over at Libsyn, and I set it up to drop on the 11th at 7 p.m., which is next Tuesday. And one of the functions, you enter all of the information about the podcast. You upload the audio file. You tick off all the boxes. You know, the things that you have to do. You enter all of your information about it. And then you tell it when you want it to release. Immediately? You want to release it now? Or do you want to, and it uses the button says publish. Do you want to publish it now or do you want to schedule it for publishing later? So I always schedule for publishing later. Very rarely do I ever want it to go right then. Sometimes I will record the podcast the day it releases, and those are the rare exceptions, but every other time it is set up to release at a later time, and that's what I did yesterday. I pulled up a little calendar, I picked the date it's supposed to release on, I set the time it's supposed to release, and sent it away confident that all was going to work, because I've been through this where I've made the mistake in the past, and I've been through this before where when I was first getting acquainted with how this all worked on the because I don't use Libsyn for mine. I use another group for mine. I use Castos. And so I had to learn the ins and outs of Libsyn and get accustomed to how they work. So I've made a mistake or two in the past with it, and I'm very careful about that. So having been burned before, I make sure I do things correctly now. Well, I did things correctly yesterday. Last night, I'm sitting in the living room with my sweetie. We're watching some TV. I'm just kind of chilling and decompressing. I'm scanning the news to see if there's anything worth talking about today. I get a text from Scott. Hey, did you release this today? Well, I did upload it, and I told him the whole story. He said, well, it's live. Not supposed to be. And in the way this works is we've got one that's out right now that we want all of the attention to be focused on, not the next one. I'm like, oh, great. And so I get up, go to the studio, correct the problem, and I'll drop it again next week. But it's just weird that I did everything right and it still went wrong. I even went and looked at there's the category, the to be released, you know, the scheduled category, and looked, and it was in the scheduled category, but still it was released. It was scheduled for the 11th, released yesterday. I think the tech world is out to get me. I don't know what's going on. Hopefully I'll live. Anyway, moving along. 23 minutes into the podcast. Well, in the live podcast, and I haven't hit a real story except for Weinstein yet. Okay. This, I don't know how real you want to consider this to be, because honestly, it's just a little whack. And that is that we actually have a representative who has suggested that the Russians were behind the vote reporting app in Monday's Iowa Democratic caucuses crashing. It was the Russians. I'm telling you, it was the Russians. Why is that always the answer? I think my dog is rabid. It was the Russians. I just don't understand. The squirrels are trying to destroy my house. They're Russian squirrels. I just don't get it. I mean, those stupid mosquitoes, they're Russian mosquitoes. It's Russians, yeah. Russia, Russia, Russia. What is it with these people? Do they really believe that their constituency is so stupid that they would believe everything is Russia? They must. How do you feel if you're one of their constituents? How do you feel if the person that you put into office believes you are so stupid you will believe that everything wrong with their nation was caused by the Russians? How do you believe that? Well, especially when it comes from Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee. Yep, it was Sheila Jackson Lee. I wish I had all of the audio clips. I gathered them up at one point, and I looked for them this morning. I couldn't find them. I wish I had the audio clips of all of the different times that this woman has opened her mouth and removed all doubt that she is a twit. At an FBI oversight hearing in the House Judiciary Committee with FBI Director Christopher Wray, Jackson Lee said she hoped Iowa Democrats would press the FBI to study the Russian involvement in the Iowa caucuses, where full results were yet to be released 4 days later. Quote, I hope that the Iowa Democrats will ask for an FBI investigation into the app. I believe that Russia has been engaged in and interfering with a number of our elections dealing with the 2016 election. I mean, what? I just don't understand.
What a maroon. What an ignoramus.
Oh, gosh. Jackson Lee's assertion comes as Iowa Democrats face scrutiny for using an app with major flaws to report caucus results to the state party to determine the winner. Mr. Ray responded, "Certainly we're also concerned about the potential Russian interference with our elections. That's why I created the Foreign Influence Task Force, which is acutely focused on that topic among other nation states that are attempting to influence our elections." According to the New York Times, the app used in Iowa had been engineered in the state just in the past 2 months and had not been tested statewide. That's what you want to do before something really important, is you want to just not test everything and make sure everything works. That's what you want to do. Trust me, I know. The app had also not been vetted by the Department of Homeland Security's cybersecurity agency and was sent to volunteers without any training. That's also something you want to do. Make sure the people using the particular thing that you haven't tested have never been trained on it. That's important, too. Remember that. Write that down where you write things. On the refrigerator, the wall next to the refrigerator, the family pet. Mm-hmm. While there is no evidence to suggest hackers corrupted the app on Monday, ProPublica found that the app lacked key safeguards to protect the integrity of the election and could have been compromised by a skilled hacker. Former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg is neck and neck with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Actually, I think Sanders has actually pulled microscopically ahead. 97% of the precincts. I think they're all in last, not as of yesterday. So, but they're still re-caucusing. Yeah, they are. Those poor people are going to have to go through this all again. Okay, the suspicious part of me, the part that's not laughing, the part that's not laughing at this is saying, could these people be testing something for the main election in November? Could there be some shenanigans going on, setting things up? I don't know. Maybe this is another one of those things that makes you go,
This helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew. Step, chew. Step, chew. Step,
hold on. I'm writing this down. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. What is the... I'm trying to fix problems and you just won't let me. I don't understand what the deal is. Anyway, it is the Friday edition of the podcast, February 7th, 2020. I mentioned that DNC Chairman Tom Perez has called for an immediate re-canvassing in Iowa. I don't know if you know this, but in spite of the fact that 100% of it is in, he has called for an immediate re-canvassing in the Iowa caucuses. He did this yesterday after days of mounting concerns surrounding the accuracy of the results. His call came after the New York Times reported on Thursday that the results were riddled with inconsistencies and other flaws. According to a New York Times analysis, more than 100 precincts reported results that were internally inconsistent, that were missing data, or that were not possible under the complex rules of the Iowa caucuses. In some cases, vote tallies do not add up. In others, precincts are shown allotting the wrong number of delegates to certain candidates. And in at least a few cases, the Iowa Democratic Party's reported results do not match those reported by the precincts. Perez said, "Enough is enough. In light of the problems that have emerged in the implementation of the delegate selection plan, and in order to assure public confidence in the results, I'm calling on the Iowa Democratic Party to immediately begin a re-canvass. The state party and reforms for 2020 introduced an opportunity for campaigns to request a re-canvass, and if necessary," this is according to the Washington Post, by the way, a recount of the results if they are able to show that new figures could alter the allocation of delegates to the national convention this summer. The state's rules do not explain how exactly a re-canvass differs from a full recount, though both are more significant than a simple precinct review, which involves checking caucus-level anomalies. CNN senior Washington correspondent Jeff Zeleny added, the Iowa Democratic Party did not have advance warning that Tom Perez was calling for a recanvass of the Iowa caucus results. That's according to two people familiar with the matter who tell this to CNN. Perez doesn't point out that the DNC has been running the show in Iowa for the last 48 hours. Before Perez's announcement, according to the AP, let's see, wait, who's this? Oh, Politico reports, before Perez's announcement, Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders were virtually tied at 26% with 97% of precincts reporting. Buttigieg led in percentage of state delegate equivalents by just a tenth of a percentage point, but Sanders led in the popular vote by more than 2,500 votes. The Associated Press says the race was too close to call. Does this smell familiar to you? The delegates versus the popular vote thing? You see what's happening here? Is that the popular vote's being won by Bernie Sanders, but Pete Buttigieg is leading with the state delegate equivalents? This is going to be very interesting. Commentators and top surrogates for socialist Bernie Sanders responded by suggesting that the DNC was trying to stop Sanders from winning the state. Far-left activist Sean King, a very confused man, wrote, let me see if I understand this. 97% of the votes are counted. Bernie surges and is about to take the lead in delegates. And Tom Perez calls for something called a re-canvass. Current Affairs wrote, Tom Perez steps in just as the last unreleased results threaten to put Bernie over the top and calls for the whole count to stop and be scrapped and start it all over again. You know, if you look up the word fishy in the dictionary, it'll refer you to this article. Because things in Iowa are very fishy. Very, very fishy. I've said before, I'll say it again, I think it's entirely likely that this is a test bed for something that they're going to try to pull coming up in November. It's also evidence that, or I don't know if it's evidence, but it goes to show that the Democrat Party will do anything to stack the election in the way that they want. Why is it so important for them not to have Bernie Sanders? Well, look at the scenario. Look at the debate on stage. You know how the candidates end up debating each other two or three times before the election? The Democrat and the Republican go on television. They're asked a series of questions, usually stacked in favor of the Democrat, and usually the moderator. Remember Candy Crowley? The moderator is in tank for the Democrats. And imagine, if you will, that debate or those debates being between the President of the United States, who has turned our economy around, who has employed more people of all backgrounds and persuasions, not just white folks like they like to tell you, but black unemployment is down, Hispanic unemployment is down, minority unemployment across the board is down. More minorities are working today than before during the Obama administration. And no, this is not the result of Obama policies. This is the argument that's been made again and again and again. And Obama's policies are what damaged the nation. And it's recovering under the confidence inspired by someone who's willing to come in and actually work as a president. Imagine that man, as popular as he is, just coming off that State of the Union address, just coming off of the victory in the impeachment trial. Just think of him and his success, his proven track record, on a stage with Bernie Sanders, whose successes involve naming post offices. Was there anything else? I don't think so. Oh, hoodwinking America. Yeah, that's another thing. This guy, who we know, let's just strip away all of the niceties and be honest. Bernie Sanders is a communist. He's a lying communist. He's an ignoramus. A man who believes that something which failed and has hurt so many people and has killed millions over the history of our world is what we need to have in America. I know, he says, when he's confronted about that, that's not what he's talking about. He shakes his head and says, no, no, no. We're talking about the Nordic nations, that kind of a model. Well, what he's referring to is not socialism. It's a market economy with extremely high taxes. Big difference. What he's talking about doing, seriously, is hardcore socialism. He may want to call it democratic socialism because that's a snazzier label that's a lot more palatable, but the bottom line is every time people vote socialism in, they have to fight to get it out. And many people die. It's happened around the world again and again and again and again and again. Imagine that guy on the stage with the success story of Donald Trump. Imagine this lunatic who honeymooned in Russia and sang communist people's songs as he drank with buddies on his honeymoon. Imagine this guy who stood and publicly praised Castro's Cuba. Imagine that guy standing on the stage opposite Donald Trump, who has a lifelong record of success. Oh, I know, they'll say, yeah, well, he's filed for bankruptcy. No. No, actually, he hasn't filed for bankruptcy. Out of the 200 businesses he's started, 5 of his businesses, that's 2.5%, if you're trying to do the math. 5 of his businesses filed bankruptcy. It happens. Failure is part of success. You learn from your failures, and then you step up, and you succeed. Something that Bernie Sanders knows nothing about. See, Bernie Sanders and his type will tell you that there were thousands of people victimized by those bankruptcies. They weren't victims. They went to work, they accepted a proposition, agreed to a rate of pay, agreed to a job, they took a job, and they went to work. Just like you or I. And we've all experienced a business letting us go, probably. You may not have, but I've been let go. In the radio business, you never know what's going to happen. You can be going to work every day and doing a job and actually growing the product that you create every day. And owners of your station, who today are more likely to be somewhere else in the country than where your station is, those owners will come in and for financial reasons sell a station out from under you. And the new owners will decide to take it a different direction and you're looking for work. That's the nature of business. It happens. You pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, you press forward. Bernie Sanders wants you to be a victim and to live as a victim, because when you're a victim, he and his ilk can be your hero and take care of you. That's a starkly different and dark picture compared to the optimistic future presented by someone like Donald Trump. Capitalism has done more to raise people out of poverty, to bring them back into health and well-being, than any other kind of government, any other kind of social foundation. Socialism, which eventually becomes communism, has done more to murder people and deprive them of what they deeply desire than any other form of government. On a stage at a debate, there's no way socialism is going to win. And there's no way the Democrat Party will allow it to take that stage. It's just not going to happen.
This portion of the show is being brought to you by our mystery sponsor, a product that is so good that they're paying us to keep anyone from associating it with this program.
There you go. Gotta love those people. All the money, none of the burden. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here with you, hoping you're having a fantastic Friday and you've had a great week and you've got a good weekend planned ahead of you. And I hope that weekend involves spending time with your family, spending time with your friends, having some fun, taking care of the honeydews, you know what I mean, and spending some time in the quiet. I think you need to. Spending time with family and friends is important. Doing the honeydews, that's important. But you also need some time without all of the noise. This is something, if you haven't listened before, it's something that I've talked about before. I'm not going to go into any length or depth about this, but it's important. You need to spend some time without the noise. No music, no podcast, no TV, no radio, no people. Just you, alone with your thoughts, alone with God. You've got to do that. It's uncomfortable. That's why nobody does it. But if you do, life is going to get better. It really is. So, we were talking about a number of things. Among those things, the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. It has drawn to a close. And our friends over at Newsbusters have put together a great little compilation that I want to play for you. The liberal media's interest gave way to disappointment. Television journalists gorged themselves on sour grapes, complaining at length that the trial was a sham, the vote was rigged, and the outcome meant nothing aside from confirming the guilt of Senate Republicans. And I'm sure that if you dig through it all, you'll find Russia in there somewhere. Special coverage panels assessing the damage done by Trump's acquittal concluded that the Constitution was in grave danger, as were democracy, the Senate, and indeed the nation. Bitter CNN legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin announced, "He's going to do this again. He said he'll do it again. And the idea that there is some chastening here is absurd." Even before the official acquittal, MSNBC host Lawrence O'Donnell complained that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had unilaterally rewritten the Constitution to prohibit a Republican president from being impeached in an election year. Yes. That is ludicrous. It is ridiculous. It is stupid. But it is what it is. Here it is in their words.
The impeachment trial of President Trump is over.
Where are we? I think we're in the midst of the storm.
It's been a travesty.
Just an absolute travesty.
This is a rigged trial with a pre-cooked outcome.
The perfect call nonsense or the ridiculous, maddening arguments undertaken by the president and his lawyers and his allies.
We've had a sham trial.
What a sham.
This sham trial.
Sham trial.
Not a real trial.
And this wasn't a trial. This was a travesty.
It's not a real trial and it's not a real exoneration.
And it's a cover-up.
The trial that wasn't really a trial will be over and we will no longer have to listen to it. The Senate can stop pretending.
No documents, no witnesses.
Not having witnesses is a hoax.
Is it a GOP or is it a grand party to cover up?
This is a cover up.
The president has learned his lesson.
Yeah.
No, he has not.
He is going to do this again.
If you basically can harness enough support, you can essentially bulldoze the Constitution.
Steal the Constitution from the people.
The Constitution no longer matters.
President Trump is functionally a monarch at this point.
The Constitution's been rewritten in the following way. A Democratic president is not allowed to name a Supreme Court justice in an election year, and a Republican president cannot be impeached in an election year. Wow. That's it.
Yep. Those are the sour grapes, kids. These guys have lost it. They have lost it. They really have. It didn't take a diehard observer of television news to predict that the news media would be incredibly frustrated by Trump's acquittal. These were, after all, the same anchors, hosts, and contributors who were murmuring excitedly about removing this president from office before he was even president. But with impeachment and the Mueller investigation now exhausted, liberal journalists can only hope that the 2020 election to rid them of the president they so despise will fulfill their dreams. Should Donald Trump secure a second term in office, there's no knowing how the media will cope. I don't think they will cope. We're talking about before the election. The liberal media, this is another story from Newsbusters that is a reference in that particular article. And that's why I tell you to get the show notes, because there are always links in the stories. There are links in the text of the stories that I don't jump off to, but you should. And this is one of those stories. The liberal media, this is from September 24th, 2019, just late last year. The liberal media have begun yet another round of frenzied impeachment speculation, this time in reaction to anonymously sourced media reports about a supposed whistleblower complaint that's been released. It has not been released. The media clucking about impeachment is nothing new. In fact, their obsession with evicting Donald Trump from the White House predicates his actual presidency. By November 10th of 2016, just 2 days after the election, television talking heads were already conjuring up theoretical scenarios in which Donald Trump could be removed from office. Since then, TV journalists have amassed quite a repertoire of possible causes for a premature end to the Trump White House, including, but not limited to, his tax returns, his family's business dealings, both home and abroad, his firing of various cabinet officials, and, of course, his tweets. Again and again and again, the news media sought some way to impeach him. It doesn't sound like impartial fact-based reporting to me. Well, fresh off the Senate impeachment trial that resulted in President Trump's acquittal, Senator Rick Scott of Florida is calling for an amendment to the Constitution that would make it more difficult for presidents to be impeached. His amendment would require a supermajority of 3/5 of the House of Representatives in order to approve articles of impeachment instead of the current standard, which is a simple majority. He says, an act as divisive as impeachment must have bipartisan backing and overwhelming support. It should be harder, much harder, for either political party to take the process our founders created as a last resort against a tyrannical leader and use it instead as a tool for the tyranny of a political majority. I look forward to all of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle joining me in this effort to protect the integrity of our nation and our Constitution. Now, in order to pass, a constitutional amendment has to receive approval from 2/3 of the House and the Senate, as well as a ratification from 3/4 of all the states. That's 38 states out of 50 have to approve it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had initially said the president should only be impeached if there is bipartisan support, but she then changed her tune and encouraged the House's impeachment inquiry despite united opposition from Republicans. It was not bipartisan. After a swift trial, only Utah Senator Mitt Romney broke ranks with Republicans by voting to convict Trump of abuse of power. I think he's wearing John McCain's shoes. Real bipartisanship should be required to do this. And Rick Scott's proposal would require real bipartisanship. I think it should happen. Will it happen? I doubt it, but I think it should. Hey, that's enough of me. Have a great weekend. Enjoy yourself. Relax. unplug, get refreshed, and meet me back here Monday for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Take the next 2 days off. How's that?